what I tell my team. I always say everything that we do, our number one goal is to make sales love us. That means that we gave them a brand that they're proud to represent. It means that we're giving them enough pipeline that they can go close. It means that we're giving them content that's consumable and usable. It means that we are giving them air cover at events so that they have a means of inviting their customers or meeting up with their customers. It means that we are giving them simple product demos that they can use with their customers. Everything we do, if it's not making sales love us more, then it's probably not a great use of time.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise the glass. Hello, everybody. I'm thrilled to be joined by Kelly Hopping, CMO at Demandbase, to reveal the new era of ABM and the key ingredients to success. Kelly, thanks so much for joining us today.
Of course. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we were comparing weather notes, as anyone does at the start of a conversation, and I'm jealous of where you're at, but excited to jump into the conversation today. So, Kelly, I know you joined Demandbase in the fall of 23, so the role is perhaps a little bit new, or relatively speaking new, I guess, still. But I was looking a little bit of your background, and you were at Texas A&M. You actually studied engineering. So before we jump into the conversation, I'd love to get a little bit more background on your journey from industrial engineering at Texas A&M into B2B SaaS in the CMO seat.
Yeah, that is kind of a funny transition. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but yeah. Yeah, I was an industrial engineer because I was good at it. I was good at math and science. And I went to Texas A&M, which is where I wanted to go. And they're known as an engineering school. And I was like, well, if I'm going to A&M, I'm going to get the best degree I can get from A&M. And so I got a degree in engineering with no intention of never wanting to be an actual engineer, but excited about the idea of getting the degree. And it worked out beautifully because before I did one summer internship in manufacturing, which is sort of one side of industrial engineering. And then the next summer, I went in, I was going to do more of a corporate gig, which is like product development in a tech company. And in the interview, for some reason, it was a bunch of tech speak. And I finally said, maybe it was a dumb question, but I was like, do I ever get to talk to people? Or am I just in front of a computer, like coding all day? And they like thought this was the funniest question they'd ever heard. And I didn't really understand why. And so move forward, of course, they laughed and said, yes, of course, you'll engage with people. But before I started, the night before, I got a call from my boss. He was the VP of product development. And he called and he said, hey, we had a reorg yesterday and I'm now the VP of product marketing. Would you like to do marketing with me for the summer? You seem like somebody who'd rather work with people than machines anyway. And I said, yes, absolutely. And I've been in marketing ever since. So I never actually, other than one summer internship, never worked in engineering, but I have worked with them my whole career, obviously. There are all the years I've been in tech. But since then, I went on, I made up marketing for about 4 years because I didn't know how to do it. I had no formal training in it, but I did it enough as a fresh college grad. And then I went back to grad school to get my MBA so I could actually learn how to do marketing. Hmm. And I did that and transitioned into consumer. Was at Kraft Foods for about 4 years doing brand management across Chips Ahoy, Nutter Butter, Kraft String Cheese. And then that was between New York and Chicago. I had a kid and decided to come back to Texas because that's where I'm from. And everything here is tech. And so I was like, oh, I guess I'm going back into the tech side. And I've been in ever since. So I spent a few years at Dell, Rackspace, AMD, Gartner, all in marketing roles across all the gamut. So brand marketing, content marketing, creative, campaigns, demand gen, SEO, paid search, you name it, all the different functions. And in my first CMO gig at Gartner in the digital markets division, which is their small business division, loved it. And I guess now I'm on my fourth stint. I've done a couple hops at some smaller startup type companies. And then now I've been at Demandbase about 6 months.
That's fascinating. What a cool journey. I love the introduction in product marketing. We find that's often a superpower. A lot of our best customers, and we think a lot of the best content creators actually have such a strong foundation in product marketing. I think that's so critical.
I think it's the hub of marketing, the hub of sort of the connection between marketing, product, and sales, actually, that linchpin that kind of holds it all together. So someone who can take all the complexities of a product, simplify it down, and communicate in a really compelling value prop, benefit-driven value story way back to a customer and enable sales to be able to translate that story, incredibly powerful. So I'm a big fan. I just spent 5 months trying to fill my VP of product marketing role on my team and finally hired him a week ago. And I'm ecstatic. He's amazing. but it was a long search because it's such a tough role.
Yeah. Congratulations on that hire. Because yeah, it is a little bit of a unique overlap between different skill sets. So this is the Content Cocktail Hour. And we always like starting before we dig in too much by asking, what are you drinking nowadays? That can be for energy, for relaxation, for inspiration. What are you enjoying?
Oh, I'm not much of an alcohol drinker. So I'm iced coffee always, whether it's 10 degrees outside or 100. I don't drink anything hot. I'm actually not coordinated enough to pull it off without burning myself. So I just drink cold all the time. Iced tea, iced coffee, iced soda. And now I'm at the age where my iced coffee has a scoop of collagen in it to make sure that I don't collapse. And a good Diet Coke. Those are probably my two go-tos.
I like it. I am a iced coffee year-round person myself. We were joking earlier. It's snowing here and I still got my iced coffee on the way to work. So love that. Cool. Let's dig in. In the introduction, I talked about the new era of ABM. It does feel like there is this shift happening in B2B marketing and in ABM specifically. You know, ABM, I feel like rose to popularity in 2015, maybe right before that, right after that. But it feels like it's reached that crescendo now where everybody is familiar with it. And now it's beginning to change all over again. So what exactly are you seeing happening in the state of ABM in 2024?
Yeah, you know, I think when it started, it was this buzzword because it was about focus. And it was really about saying, okay, who are these key accounts that you're going to focus on? And it was very much a one-to-one play. We're going to have this target account we're going after. We're going to build them a landing page. We're going to build them specific content. And we're going to go out and market directly to them and all of their buying committee. And I think that's how it started. And it took a long time, I think, for people to figure out what it meant. And even now, I mean, 10 years later, I think there's still a misunderstanding. I don't know if it's a misunderstanding of what account-based marketing was intended for, but certainly there are multiple definitions of what it stands for today. And so I think that's been the challenge. And so now it's really about no one can afford to do one-to-one with a handful of customers. Account-based marketing, its true value comes in aligning sales and marketing together around the same accounts and being able to market to them and close them at scale. And so I think that's the challenge. So it's not necessarily just one-to-one anymore. It's one-to-few, one-to-many, and being able to repeat and automate those processes. And then I think the biggest thing that we see happening is it was started as a marketing function. It was like marketing automation, right? It started as one of the critical tech elements that you need in your stack for marketers to outbound to their targets. The challenge is that the value comes when sales catches. It can't just be a marketing throw or pitch with sales has to catch it or else it falls flat. I should play with that. That actually is a little baseball metaphor. I could work on that one, pitching, catching. But anyways, so that's where we see ABM fall, or when customers try it and then decide to abort or abandon their ABM strategy is when their sales team doesn't adopt it as well. When marketing and sales are all using it in harmony, they're all leveraging the same data, the same intent, the same accounts, the same focus. They're watching the same lead journey. Then it's magical because then you're able to watch these folks all the way through. So yeah, I think that's where account-based marketing is going. It's going to be it's just a poorly named category. It should be account-based growth, account-based sales and marketing, account-based motion. It should be something that's tied to what the entire go-to-market function is doing, not just marketing.
I like that a lot because I've seen ABM where I was at previously mean everything from direct mail and like truly just like gifting to truly alignment with the sales team. And you can guess which one was more successful.
Right.
But does ABM, does it need redefined? And if so, like how would you go about doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it needs redefined I think what we happening in the industry is that there are ABM players out there, meaning the manufacturers of ABM software, who are abandoning the term ABM and trying to create new categories. So they might be calling it revenue marketing or revenue AI or go-to-market or some term. But those terms are so small. Like if you look at search volumes or anything else, people aren't there. The tech companies may be over the term ABM, but our customers are absolutely not. ABM is like the number one search term for marketers out there. Like you can add every other periphery term together, all of its volume, it makes up a fraction, like a single digit fraction of the ABM search volumes. And so when you look at that, you think, man, customers, they're not over ABM yet. We may be thinking we need to reinvent it, but they're not. So It's not about replacing ABM with something. And I know that wasn't your question, but it really is about expanding the definition of what ABM is, that it is account-based sales and marketing, that it is about an account-based motion across all of your teams that touch a customer. And that's a very different mindset. And so, yeah, I think it does require, it's certainly one of the causes that we're fighting for, demand-based, and trying to really make sure that ABM equals sales and marketing alignment. More than one-to-one landing pages, more than direct mail, more than invites to a Knicks game. It's about sales and marketing aligning around the same accounts and going after them in a concentrated, orchestrated way.
That example of renaming the category before the audience or the customers are ready to rename the category is such a like classic example of marketers outsmarting themselves, which I think sometimes we get in the way of our own good sometimes. So that's really interesting. So you mentioned sales and marketing alignment working together. Who should own ABM in this era?
For us, what typically happens is marketing has the budget, sometimes rev ops, which could be marketing ops, sales ops, or both. Sometimes that sits in sales, sometimes in marketing, sometimes it's two different teams, sometimes it sits in finance. So there's a few different folks, but usually marketing is going to be the driver of it. But a marketing team will realize very quickly their success depends on their sellers adopting it. And so the sales leadership team has to be a key influencer and bought into that decision and bought into that implementation. So for us, what we do right now, for example, is we run demand base on demand base, which means our marketers are running on demand base, our ops team is running on demand base, and our sales team is running on demand base. Our sellers have a slightly different experience because they are using a sales optimized interface. Marketers are using a marketing optimized interface. So we're running the ads, we're running the outbound, we're running the direct mail. The sales team is then seeing it through a Salesforce iframe, like their display is engaged in a single point of view in Salesforce. They're running it through there. But at the end of the day, we are all users of it and we're all sharing the data and insights and intent across both. But ultimately, marketing owns it. Marketing pays for it. Sales, though, is so critical to adopt it because I feel like the main time it will churn, meaning a customer won't renew with ABM, is when the sales team doesn't use it or doesn't like it. And so the marketer may make the decision to purchase it, but sales is going to make the decision to keep it. And so that's where I think it's so critical that you have both hands at the table, both parties aligned, both teams or both leaders pushing down to their teams adoption and usage.
What do you see as the main driver between good adoption and poor adoption when it's going from marketing and sales across the demand-based customer base?
I think it's understanding, because there's a lot of things you can do. It's a super powerful tool. Mm-hmm. And sellers have a lot on their plate, right? They're trying to manage a lot of different accounts. They're trying to move multiple ones through the lead flow and through the pipeline. So there's a lot on their plate. They've got a lot moving. They want to consume, like, what can I learn in 30 seconds? Or what can I learn in, you know, a 20-minute demo that I can then pass on to my customers? And so really what we want to do for them is really keep it as simple as possible, right? We want to make sure that we are not overcomplicating it. So the features with them is just making sure that they can see the same data, that they can catch when we run an ad. So what we want them to be able to do is if we run an ad at a certain customer and that customer responds in some way, maybe they come visit our website, that they can see, oh, IBM came and John Smith from IBM is on our ABX page. And it looks like they spent a lot of time watching case studies. Oh, I can follow up with them because I have their information. And so if we can get sales to follow up in that way, then it's not just a push marketing tactic with no catch. Instead of it's sales just continuing the journey on. So to me, that's what's most important is for them to understand just the basics of being able to use the data, have it prioritize which accounts to go after, because it gives lead scoring and says, hey, these customers are here. They've been here five times. Or, hey, there are seven different people from the same company that have all visited this page. We should follow up with them.
Always a fan of simplification when it comes to working with sales, right? That should be the goal, right? Marketing should make their role easier and their activity easier. So it's pretty cool technology.
Our number one goal this year, when I tell my team, I always say everything that we do, our number one goal is to make sales love us. That means that we gave them a brand that they're proud to represent. It means that we're giving them enough pipeline that they can go close. It means that we're giving them content that's consumable and usable. It means that we are giving them air cover at events so that they have a means of inviting their customers or meeting up with their customers. It means that we are giving them simple product demos that they can use with their customers. Everything we do, if it's not making sales love us more, then it's probably not a great use of time.
I love that definition. It's so simple. Like, again, I think sometimes marketers, we get in our own way of wanting to do what's cool and trendy and next and innovative. And it's like, hey, at the end of the day, our job is really to make sales better. And it sounds like you are aligned in that way. And I would imagine a lot of your sales team really appreciates that.
I hope so.
Well, this is the content cocktail hour. So I have to ask, how does content play a role in successful ABM and alignment with account-based sales as well?
Yeah, content is at the crux of all of it, right? When I got here, we didn't really have a content team, I'll be honest. So we had a lot of folks creating random acts of content across different functions. And that was totally fine, but it meant that it was missing the shared voice or missing a strategy aligned to search. Like, there's a lot of things it wasn't doing. And so the first thing I did was sort of restructure the team and brought in a head of content marketing. You know, his key pillars are around simple bill of materials for sales enablement. It's about thought leadership, but in 600 words or less. It was in these sort of really like consumable bite-sized chunks and not just written, right? Video or whatever else, different types of content. But at the end of the day, how it fits into ABM is we use content a lot as sort of our hook. We use content when we run ads, whether we invite them to download some white paper or something that we wrote, or invite them to a webinar or a webinar on demand. This is all content that we want them to be a part of. And I think that comes down to not just the words of the content, but also the headline and the hook and what brings them into it. And is it compelling? Does it address a pain point that they're struggling with? So that's a big one. And then organic is a really big piece of how we get traffic to the site. And you can do organic in a lot of different ways. We've explored ways where you can get millions and millions of visitors that are crap, that aren't anything related to whatever. I could write an article about how to delete your Instagram account, but it's not going to drive a high converting ABM customer, but I might get a lot of volume out of it. And so instead, it's about writing not only high search content, but also content where we can differentiate ourselves, content where it's a low competitive set, but still a highly searched term, content that brings in high intent buyers. And so all these things are what are going to bring people into our fold, that expand our TAM, that we then start to outbound against when they visit. So yeah, so content's a big part of all of it.
I am definitely stealing random acts of content. I love that. We see a lot of people doing it. I think the way you're thinking about it is far more sophisticated. I also love you mentioned the pain point, the hook. I think sometimes people fall in love with marketing the solution, or and we don't market the problem, but we market the hero and not the villain enough. That's something we talk a lot about on our own team and what we're going to market with. So I think that's really powerful as well.
I like that idea of the villain, not the hero. That's really interesting. I just hired a new copywriter who worked for me at Gartner, and I saw she was free and I was like, oof, come over here. She starts on Monday. I'm so excited because she's one who constantly A-B tests headlines and A-B tests so subject lines and emails, or A-B tests like flow and format and whatever. And I just love it because she's always trying to optimize conversion or click-through or engagement, or to get people to read all 600 words instead of 400 or 200 and then flip. So yeah, I'm a big fan of making sure that you're grabbing people the right thing and then you're paying it off correctly.
That's awesome. I love that. I think anytime you have a content marketer that thinks beyond just the words and is thinking about conversion and flow, really, really powerful. So excited for you there. I'm curious, from the CMO seat, maybe even just broader than ABM, broader than content, what's top of mind as we are, I guess we're about a quarter of the way through 2024, but as you head into this new year, what's top of mind from the CMO seat?
We're still in a recession. That's the reality. Like to think we're not, I think, because I don't know why, but it seems like we should be out of it by now. It's been going on for so long. And so really it's about trying to be smart and intentional with the budgets we have, the resources we have, while we get through the end of this recession. Now, I do believe we're on the back end of it. I think, you know, by the end of 24, we should be done, and early 25 should be a great year. That's my theory. That's what I'm telling myself. So it's about being really, really smart. So part of it, you know, I think about what happened, let's say during COVID, when there was a lot of uncertainty and people didn't know. It wasn't a recession, it was actually a boom, but it was still a time when people are like, I don't really know what to do. I don't know if people are buying, I should do some layoffs, whatever. But instead, people took it as a time to invest in not just the things that move the business, but the things that ultimately transform the business. So to me, that's when we're focused on rebuilding our brand, redefining it, changing up our messaging, redefining our pricing and our packaging, all the things that sort of will have a long-term transformation. They're not going to affect my pipeline next week, but they're going to make us look like a very different company in 6, 12, 18 months. And so I think right now what it is how do I best balance maximizing pipe in a recession while also making those big bet investments in the things that are going to be ready to drop as soon as the market turns. So that's what's top of mind for me.
It's an interesting challenge to balance short-term and long-term when the market may look very different between the short-term and long-term as well. It's a very delicate balance.
Absolutely. And we don't know what the long-term is.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, you mentioned it for the last 18 months, we've been saying, oh, in 6 months, it's going to be better. In 6 months, it's going to be better. But it does. I think even as we've moved into the start of the year, we've started to hear and see some budgets loosen up or some people keeping budget flat as opposed to cutting. So some glimmers of hope for sure. Yeah. Last question we always like to ask our guests, what is one unpopular opinion you have in the marketing or content space?
It's an unpopular opinion.
A hot take, an unpopular opinion.
Yeah, I think for me is maybe it's tied to, because I walked into a random acts of content piece, I think content without consumption is just a massive waste. And I feel like often we build these big, robust content strategies and a big list of all these pieces of content we need to create. And we don't optimize it to get consumed. We either don't build it to be searched by the right things. We don't put any promotion dollars behind it. When I was at Gartner, I had about 30 content writers on my team, which was a lot. And that was because we were a derivative of Gartner, which is a research content company. Mm-hmm. And so even in the digital market space, we had a pretty large content team. And I transformed them from a research organization into a content marketing engine, which meant they had to be thinking about more than just creating beautiful 3,500-word research papers, and instead breaking it into these bite-sized, consumable, promotable pieces. And so it totally changed the skill set, the turnaround time, but it also changed the traffic to the site. It changed the engagement. It changed the click-through. It changed the contribution of content to revenue. Because all of a sudden now it wasn't about winning research awards. Instead, it became about using content as a means to drive awareness, consideration, preference, all the things that the content marketing should do. So it sounds pretty simple. I just always think about when we have a great idea for a piece of content, I think, what's the purpose in that thing? How is it going to get consumed? Do we have dollars to get it consumed? Is it optimized for search so it will naturally get consumed? Have our sellers been trained on it to use it in a way that will be consumed? Is it just going to go on a sales guy's shelf and he's never going to use it because it's not meaningful? Is it too long to use? You know, all the different things. And so like we had a piece of document, a beautiful document I inherited when I got here that was written in the former marketing regime here. It's like 230 pages. Fantastic. I was like, I want you to go make me like 57 articles out of this because no one's ever going to read this document. It's so long. Or make a bunch of short 30-second videos with it because there's some great meat in here. But if it's in this form, it's never going to get consumed. And so I just think content without consumption or without even the thought of how this thing will get consumed is just a waste of resources and time and money.
I used to say even pre-generative AI that our ability to create content has far surpassed our ability to effectively distribute content. And now that's even gotten accelerated. But I think you're right. If we can't distribute content, it's a pain to consume for our audience as well. Like they can't consume everything we're creating, even though it's easier than ever. So a lot of careful consideration needs to be given to that as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, cool. If people want to learn more about yourself or demand base, what's the best way to do that?
LinkedIn for sure to find me, demandbase.com to find DemandBase. We'd love to hear from you. So feel free to reach out anytime.
Well, thanks so much, Kelly, for joining us. We really appreciate it today. If anybody wants to learn more about DemandBase, go check out demandbase.com and connect with Kelly on LinkedIn. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour. See you next time, same place. Cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time, same place. Cheers.